In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
If you had a chance to go back in time and warn the people of 1930s Germany about what was coming, would you do it? Of course you would. Who wouldn't? But would they listen? Would they believe you? Imagine trying to tell them that if they elected Hitler, it would lead to the German people turning on their neighbors, handing them over to authorities to be slaughtered in the millions. How many Germans in 1932, the year before Hitler was elected and quickly turned it into a dictatorship, how many in 1932 would believe that concentration camps would start just 1 year later in March of 1933? Conversely, if someone from 1945 Germany were to come forward to warn you about what will happen now if you don't take a stand, if you don't stop being silent and stop assuming, oh, it will never happen here. It couldn't possibly happen that a small group of people would have grand schemes to seize massive amounts of control, be willing to kill millions, and people would stand by and do nothing to stand up for their friends and neighbors, let alone stand by and do nothing to stop the loss of their own freedoms. Tell that to the Germans. Listen to history. On today's show, we have two great guests on who have been trying to warn America about COVID, about the abuse of power by elected officials, and about the dangers of the vaccine. COVID and the government's seizure of dictatorial powers are the most important topic of our day, and yet a lot of people out there continue to not want to believe it. Are you one of them? I'd like to welcome Dr. Henry Ely back to the show. He holds a doctorate in naturopathic medicine and is board certified in holistic nutrition. He's also the founder and executive community director of the Energetic Health Institute, and he has written extensively on and worked to expose misconduct by public officials around COVID-19 and the vaccines. Dr. Ely, thanks for joining us today.
All right, Mark. Thanks for having me again. It's so exciting to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I got to say, as I was prepping for this week's show, I read article after article, multiple videos and social media posts and the news about the vaccines and their severe side effects, the long-term effects still unknown, and the government's push to force or coerce people into getting the vaccines. You know, it's not only discouraging, but in some cases, some of these things, it just comes across as downright chilling. And mm-hmm. So, you know, we get to take a break from COVID and the vaccines with shows on, you know, different fun and exciting topics like, you know, politics and whatnot. But mm-hmm. being in the medical profession and part of organizations leading the fight against this, I mean, you're in the middle of this every day. How do you stay positive when there's just so much bad news and ugliness surrounding all of this? How do you pick yourself up?
Well, I think it's really simple. Number one, I'm really grateful. I have a wonderful group of supportive and loving people around me, and I'm really indebted and grateful to them. But every morning, meditation, getting into a good breath rhythm, getting into good prayer, and making sure that when I'm meditating, I'm asking myself very important questions. And the first question I ask myself every morning is, who's in control of how I feel about me? And once I get that question right, I have 19 more questions I ask myself. and then I come in, and after I'm done with some intermittent fasting, I typically will power up with some good energy producing nutrients, as well as the immunoprotective nutrients that we've talked about, and the vitamin D's and A's and C's, all the things that we should be, in my professional opinion, sharing with people, that there are so many wonderful options out there so that they don't have to live their lives in fear. And then I think the last thing, Mark, it's really important, is turn off the news. There's nothing good on there. It's designed to just program you into fear. And I think everybody I've talked to who's turned off the news and turned off social media, within 2 days, they tell me how much better they feel about the world and life in general. So I think those are some of the secrets to my success.
Well, I noticed too that in a lot of the material I was going through, there's even a spiritual component to this, good versus evil. Mm-hmm. And people who I probably wouldn't agree with on a lot of things politically, like Dr. Naomi Wolf, who is a longtime Democrat activist, is desperately trying to wake people up to the danger that if we allow things like forced vaccines and vaccine passports, and America is gone along with all of our freedoms. And that what's being proposed is not just wrong, but evil. In one video, doctors who are agnostics or not normally spiritual or religious people, and in some cases even atheists, they've entered into a sort of spiritual awakening as they have been watching what's happening. Do you see that too, that there's a spiritual battle going on here?
Oh, most definitely. One of the things that's really interesting, and I'm a recovering Democrat myself, and I think one of the things that we've woken up to is that the entire system is corrupt. And when we have something that is diseased and corrupt, we can make two choices. We can continue to do the same thing and lead us further into the expression of that disease process, or we can do something about it. We can say, let's stop for a second and let's take an objective look at all the things that we have at our disposal to correct the situation. And the first thing that we have to do to correct this situation is to admit that we have a situation, that we have a problem, and then take active measures. And I think some of the things that we've done with the the Bayh-Dole Act and the Smith-Munn Act, and the Bayh-Dole Act that allows, you know, the NIH to be involved with Moderna and for that to be a for-profit thing for public officials is a problem. I think public officials without term limits, whether they're elected or whether they're appointed, is a problem. I think the gross amount of money that floods into our governments from corporations is a major problem. And I think that our failure to hold people accountable for simple and obvious wrongdoing. Yes. I mean, it's one thing like when you're a corporation, if you've stolen millions and billions of dollars from people, if your punishment is a fine, that's not okay. You know, we have to make the punishment fit the crime.
Yes. Right. Genuine restitution for sure.
Right. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was on a thread on Facebook that had led off asking who of their friends had been vaccinated and if they'd had any symptoms. As of this morning, there were over 73 comments, and just comment after comment after comment of complications. Several, there were no complications, a handful had light symptoms, but then there were ones like this. My husband, he wasn't well anyway and got worse after both doses. My wife's uncle died from it. My best friend works for a nursing home, and everyone was required to take the shot if they wanted to leave or have visitors. Six of them died right after the vaccine. My friend had both doses and had a stroke yesterday. My cousin, who's 23, had a heart attack and is in the hospital. A good friend of mine on Facebook has a daughter-in-law who's pregnant and got the vaccine and miscarried her baby 2 weeks later. She had two other children with no problems. And, you know, I took a screenshot of that because the last time I had seen a thread like that was in a private group, and Facebook not only took down that post, but disbanded the whole group, stopping people from talking about these kinds of things. And I look at all those people suffering, and then I see headlines like, with Fed's help, Moderna forecasts record revenues of $19.2 billion, profiting off of pain and suffering with zero liability or accountability. That, to me, is real evil.
It's evil. It's certainly misconduct. Right. It's certainly willful misconduct. And I think I can speak to some of what you just said. We call the Verus data every week and compare it against previous week. Well, last week, 2,063 new death reports came in, which raised the total to 9,048. We've never seen any medical product have this track record in this short a period of time. Deaths within 48 hours, 3,453. That's up 757 from the previous week. When you talk about spontaneous miscarriages, 985, which is up 210 from the previous week. When we look at stroke and TIA, transient ischemic attacks, 5,495. That's up 1,110 from the previous week. And, you know, and then you start looking at things like deaths from heart attacks, 1,083. And I think what really chills me about that is the data is staring us right in the face. And this is our surveillance system. It's incredibly flawed. Nobody's going to say it's not incredibly flawed. But what's very interesting about it is when you read the Health and Human Services report from, I think, 2009, from that was submitted by Harvard Pilgrim. Harvard Pilgrim took a $1 million grant, which is a small amount of money, money in terms of taxpayer dollars. And they actually designed a much better system that was going to interface with Veris to give a much more robust and accurate accounting of causality. And once they were successful in that, the CDC ghosted them. They refused to talk to them. They didn't enact new software. And I think they gave them a small grant thinking they wouldn't be able to pull it off. You know, and they pulled it off. And so it's not like we haven't known that this system is flawed and needs improvement, but I find it very interesting that the CDC doesn't want it improved.
Yeah, that alone is very telling. You know, I just really hope people are waking up, and I pray that people are waking up and that they're realizing that this is not just the health of people at stake, but the health of our nation and freedoms at stake. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're spending so much time on this, because there is so much at stake. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Henry Ely. And welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Henry Ely. He is the founder and executive community director of the Energetic Health Institute based in Portland. He has been closely following COVID-19 since its beginning and has written 5 papers on it. And Dr. Ely, last time we talked, we discussed the lies that have created the situation we're in. Right from the very beginning, it was lie after lie. The origins of the virus, that it really was created in a lab, not a natural disease. The infection rates, which relied on setting PCR tests too high of a cycle that generated huge false positives. The death rate, which we now learn was misattributed as much as 20 times higher than it should have been by changing what counted as a death rate. Lies that alternative treatments did not exist, that masks work. And now we have an entire system built around propagating those lies, and especially in the media and from government officials, all of which appears to be the goal of which to force people into taking the vaccine. So what's disturbing and should be alarming to everyone about those lies is that they were not and are not accidental mistruths where they said things based on incomplete knowledge or misunderstandings or from bad data. They created the bad data. They knew at the time that those were all lies, didn't they?
Yes. I mean, quite point blank. Yes. And that's the subject of our grand jury push right now to make sure we get some independent eyes, especially with a background in science. Making sure that they are holding these people to the highest empirical evidence-based standards that they should, so that we can hold them to the highest standards that the law allows.
And I would just love to see that grand jury happen. In my research for this show, there were 2 things about the vaccines that caught my attention. And one is an ongoing discussion about particle buildup from the vaccines in the body that could lead to widespread infertility and depopulation. The second was self-replicating vaccines. But let's start with the infertility portion of things. First, depopulation is a real thing. I mean, there really are people and very wealthy foundations that believe in depopulating the earth. Now, just for example, in 1968, the Rockefeller Foundation annual report said, quote, "Very little work is in progress on immunological methods such as vaccines, to reduce fertility, and more research is required if a solution is to be found here." And many prominent doctors and investigators have come to believe that this may, in fact, be the real motivation behind the lies and pushing the vaccine so hard, because there is no other way of explaining this other than some sort of effort at depopulation. So before I go any further, have you seen anything that would make you think, oh, that whole depopulation theory, that's just crazy talk?
No, I've seen so much that makes me feel like it's very relevant. And I think it's worthy of significant investigation, transparent investigation, so that we can determine the validity of it, because everything that we're looking at objectively looks like that's the impetus. When we look at the Japanese do something very unique in the world in terms of assessing vaccine safety and efficacy. They don't trust the manufacturers. They do their own independent analysis. And they released a study that showed conclusively that within 48 hours, there's accumulation of the mRNA sequences in the ovaries and in the spleen. So with the ovaries being the implication of infertility. It's something Dr. Michael Yeadon has been warning us, who was the former chief scientist at Pfizer, been warning us for since this began. And he did great work on the PCR test and exposing that fraud as well. I think what's very important for us to do is to understand the history of eugenics. Eugenics is this misguided notion that a few people have a right to decide who gets to procreate, who gets to live on this planet. It was something that was actually championed in the United States, and there were laws on the books for eugenics and the forced sterilization of women all the way up until 1981. The last sterilization of a woman occurred in Oregon, actually, in 1981. So we were actually the country that kind of set the groundwork for Nazi Germany in terms of Hitler going, wow, you guys are doing some interesting stuff over there with population control. I think we can take that up a notch here in Nazi Germany. And for a very short period of time, he was, with a lot of horror and tragedy, he was successful with that. And I think when we look at something on a global scale like this and the potential of an mRNA sequence to create injurious spike proteins, especially in tissues like the ovaries, that it stands to reason that it sets people up long-term for infertility. And when you start seeing the amount and the collection of death associated in our high-risk demographics, people who are already had on average 4 comorbidities and were at advanced age, you see that if you can lower the weakest among you in terms of population and you can prevent the youngest among you from procreating, it does set the stage for a eugenics experiment, or it's actually a eugenics action potentially taking place. And we need to know definitively whether that was, so that we can hold those people accountable, because that is, I mean, I don't know how to call it anything other than evil.
No, absolutely not. So in terms of self-replicating vaccines, this is kind of new to me. And this, from what I'm reading, is it sounds like this is, in fact, a feature of mRNA vaccines, that they can either be coded in such a way to be self-replicating or be coded in such a way that they will, in fact, shut off at some point. And as I understand it, this was designed to be used in animal populations, and so you would need to only capture one or two animals, inject them, and then they end up spreading the vaccine throughout the population. What can you tell us about this?
Well, the first thing I've seen on it was from Johns Hopkins University, which has the dubious distinction, of course, of being involved in the immortal life of Henrietta Lacks, where they basically stole and have utilized her cell line, the HeLa cell line, for profit without sharing any of those proceeds, the billions of dollars of proceeds, with the family. And it was an unethical act that led to it. So I don't trust Johns Hopkins University. Of course, they're the same university that was involved in Event 201, which occurred in October of 2020, and made sure all their systems were ready to be able to track this. So, you know, there's a lot of connections there with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and all of their ties that they have. All of this starts becoming very concerning. When you then start looking at the potential of self-replicating viruses, it explains why they would want to co-opt normal cellular function and uploading a mRNA sequence into the body, so that the mRNA sequence that they upload is constantly being produced. It's like the body becomes the factory for the disease process instead of the infectious disease process, which is unconscionable, which is why I just in no way, shape, or form will advocate for anyone utilizing this genetic therapy. And I will refuse to call it a vaccine. It's not a vaccine. When you go one step further and you listen to the inventor of the mRNA technology and you read the paper that was published by the Health and Human Services Department in 2018, it reveals something very, very interesting. And he finally came out and said this 2 weeks ago. We are not confident that there is an off switch for this. And I think there is, and we'll talk about that. But I find that very disturbing, that someone would create something of this magnitude, a technology that could be used with this level of potential extinction level event devastation to our species, and not have an off switch, a definitive off switch.
And release it on the public without first being able to verify that it is an off switch. Okay, let's go ahead and pick that up in the next segment. And we'll stay with us more with Dr. Henry Ely. Welcome back. Dr. Ely leads the Energetic Health Institute based in Portland and is working with a team of doctors and other specialists to warn people about the misconduct by public officials around COVID-19 and the vaccines. And so going out of that break, you mentioned something really rather chilling, that the inventor of the mRNA technology isn't sure that there's an off switch for this. I mean, that is truly chilling.
Yeah, I believe his statement was there is no confirmed off switch for this.
Wow. You know, as I have, just doing the research leading up to this and you know, talking about the spike proteins and, you know, things that we've talked about in the past,
And now there's some new discussion that the vaccines may have things that are just flat out poisonous in there. So this leads me to the question, if the spike proteins are bad and can alone cause damage, why aren't even more people getting reactions to these vaccines?
Well, I think what we have to keep in mind is underreporting. Underreporting of injury has been seeded by several things. Number one, misinforming the public that if they are feeling fatigued, having trouble breathing, achy in their bodies, feverish in their bodies, lightheaded, headaches, stuff like that, post inoculation, that's normal as the sign that the inoculation is working. I think that lowered a tremendous amount of reporting back, and it made people feel like, oh, well, this is supposed to happen. That means it's working, when it's just the opposite. That's proof of injury. Hmm. I think what you also have to then weigh in is the number of doctors and nurses and Rite Aid technicians who are completely untrained on how to identify what an inoculation injury looks like, let alone know how to report to the vaccine adverse events reporting system. And then you get another layer in there of medical professionals who absolutely refuse to acknowledge that inoculation injury is a thing. So they refuse to report on there. And then the last piece, and we've had doctors confirm this, doctors who've attempted to report through Veris, when they put their notes in, they put the record in, it keeps getting erased before it even gets sent. One doctor I've talked with spent over 3 hours, Dr. Peter McCullough actually, spent over 3 hours attempting to get a single record entered into the vaccine adverse events reporting system, and then ultimately had to give up on that way and send in a hard copy of it, which he doesn't know whether it was ever registered. So you start getting all these different layers of obstruction, and it makes it difficult to understand the depth of the problem.
Some people have said the Veris system is underreported by a factor of 10. I think Dr. McCullough has even said recently that it may, in fact, be underreported by a factor of 100.
Well, certainly the Health and Human Services report that was filed by Harvard Pilgrim showed that over 99% of vaccine injuries at that time went unreported. So we know it can be as high as that. We don't think it's that high with this, but I would say I wouldn't be surprised if somebody told me that 90% of the injuries or 80% of the injuries went unreported. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Hmm. So my trust in government and their partners, the pharmaceutical countries, is effectively non-existent after all of this. And so this was a question that I had wanted to ask you last time, and we just flat out didn't have time for it. And it's kind of a bit of a tinfoil hat supposition, but could the reason that more people aren't getting reactions to the vaccines is because they're giving placebos, fake vaccines? I mean, you go there, you get a shot, but how do you really know that they're actually giving you a vaccine?
It's a great question. I've thought about it myself. We don't have any proof of it at this point in time, but I have seen videos where they said like a health minister or a public official was getting vaccinated, inoculated on camera, right? And we saw that the needle never went into the arm. You know what I mean? Like they drew the solution. So in this day and age, with all we've seen in the last 17 months, I'm at this place where nothing would surprise me anymore. And my trust in our government is completely eroded. I will tell you this, and I'll tell your audience this. Our government, it appears to be more dangerous than the virus that they helped make. And one of the most dangerous places I think a person can be is in a medical office at this time. And I have substantive empirical evidence to support that statement.
That's horrible to think. But, you know, getting back to this notion that there may be fake vaccines, I mean, really, how could you tell? I mean, you already have a 99.8% chance of survival. So you can't say the vaccine saved you because you were already predisposed not to die from it. By their own admission, the vaccine doesn't stop you from getting the virus or transmitting it if you did get it. So and if it is fake, it doesn't really matter because, as I said, you're practically guaranteed to survive. It's like, here, carry this magic pebble around with you and you won't get struck by lightning. And if you didn't get struck by lightning, well, see, the pebble works.
Did you are you a fan of Joe Walsh at all, the musician? Living a life of illusion, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes,
we are living in a complete world of illusion, and we have to desperately, rapidly get back to a world of empirical, prove-it evidence to undo this.
So for people who got the vaccine and regret it or have been having problems because of it, is there anything people can do to cleanse this toxin from their bodies?
I'm working with a number of incredible doctors right now in designing a protocol that we just did our first case study on this weekend, and it was a miraculous turnaround. We had a 67-year-old man who we felt was going to perish if we didn't intervene. We intervened, and the protocol that we used on him led to a complete reversal within 72 hours
wow.
of all symptomatology. So we're really excited about that, and we hope to publish that case study in the next week, 1 to 2 weeks.
Hmm. Well, we certainly look forward to that. Dr. Ely, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been great.
Oh, thanks for having me so much, Mark. It's always a joy to be here. Oh, I wish under better circumstances, of course.
That is for sure.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.
To anyone listening who thinks we're spending too much time on COVID and the vaccines, the reason we're doing this is because it is far and away the most important issue of our day. Not the pandemic, not the vaccines, but the government response and its seizure of power and using them as the excuse to take away your freedom. To fight back, you need to know the fraud that is happening. You need the knowledge so that you can spread it to your friends and family and they to theirs. Knowledge is what needs to be the true self-replicating vaccine until our freedoms are fully restored and the true virus, authoritarianism in all its forms, is truly destroyed. To help continue that exposure, I'd like to welcome Dr. James Lyon Weiler to the show. He is the founder and CEO of the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. That's IPAC, I-P-A-K, which is a not-for-profit organization that exists to perform scientific research in the public interest. He is also the editor-in-chief of the peer-reviewed journal Science, Public Health, Policy, and the Law. Dr. Weiler, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Mark. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I understand you go by Dr. Jack, and that's a little bit easier on the mouth, so I think we'll go with Dr. Jack. As we've said previously, that despite their hyperventilating desperation to compel everyone to get the vaccine, the government itself has said that taking the vaccine does not fully protect you from getting COVID-19. But there's an additional issue at play here. Talk to us about pathogenic priming and what that is.
Sure. So when the scientists who were involved in the vaccine development for the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome virus and for the original SARS virus in 2003 and thereon attempted to develop vaccines, they discovered that when they would vaccinate animals, specifically ferrets and rats, against these coronaviruses, then expose the animals to the wild virus, that the animals developed very strange, serious symptoms. Some of them developed lung immunopathology, that is, diseases of the lung, like respiratory illness, pneumonia-like, but many of them developed hepatitis, and they had problems with their kidneys, and many of the animals died. So the concern has been, well, what caused that? And if there is a coronavirus vaccine now being used in humans, is it likely that that is what's going to happen if the vaccinated people now are exposed to the wild type virus? And in April 2020, I published a peer-reviewed paper on SARS-CoV-2. Now, that was very early on in this pandemic, April 2020. Mm-hmm. Because I recognized that it was going to be important to communicate to the people who were developing the vaccine that part of the immunopathology of this virus was almost certainly autoimmune in origin. Specifically, the concern was that this virus, like the SARS virus, like the MERS virus, may contain proteins of which parts of those proteins are very similar to human proteins through a process called molecular mimicry. And that condition of molecular mimicry means that the antibodies that you produce against the viral epitope or the viral protein that your antibodies can recognize and your B cells can recognize might become confused and mistarget and start attacking your own body tissues, because hepatitis and the nephritis, the serious illnesses that the animals suffered were certainly, almost certainly autoimmune in nature in the original vaccine trials. But at the time, you know, since 2005, when they first started talking about this, and actually earlier on, this was originally called disease enhancement, and it made the disease worse. But somewhere along the way, the terminology got changed to immune enhancement, which sounds like positive. Something that's desirable.
Yeah.
Right? It sounds like you're reinforcing your immunity. And that's an unfortunate phrase, because it really didn't alert people to how serious this could be. So when Moderna came out with a vaccine within the very short period of time that they did, I was highly motivated to publish this, to send a message to the people developing vaccines. You want to take out the unsafe epitopes, and here they are. I did a thorough homology search of all the proteins in the virus against all the proteins in the human genome. After I found the parts of the proteins in the virus that were likely to be reactive to the immune system and detected by the immune system, of which our bodies would likely produce antibodies. Subsequent to my publication, there have been dozens and dozens of papers that have published citing my publication, my study, but also Harvard University and Boston General Hospital and a few other places collaborated to test my hypothesis of pathogenic priming using antibodies in the laboratory. And they found that, yes, my predictions were correct, and they extended my analysis to include mitochondrial proteins, which I had not thought of to include in my analysis. So there is a basis of concern, a valid, strong basis of real concern, that people that have been exposed to the spike protein through the vaccination may be at risk of autoimmunity due to the unsafe epitopes that are included in the spike protein. Whether the spike protein is from Moderna or from Pfizer might determine which unsafe epitopes were there. Moderna simply took the native spike protein sequence right out of the GenBank for the original Wuhan 1 seafood market, alleged seafood market sequence. And remember, these vaccines only have the spike protein. They don't have the other proteins, and so there's no risk due to vaccination of the other unsafe epitopes in the other proteins. The protein that has the largest number of unsafe epitopes is called open reading frame 1AB. And that one has a larger percentage of the unsafe epitopes in the viral proteome. But spike protein comes in number two, I'm sad to say. So when we're looking at the risk, I've tried to look at which vaccine has fewer unsafe epitopes. And under my analysis, which is not peer-reviewed yet, this one is a doozy of analysis. It's taking quite some time.
Sure.
It looks like Moderna has because it has the original spike protein, it has the full complement of unsafe epitopes that were in the natural virus. Whereas Pfizer, in the sequence that was published by Stanford University, appears to have changed the sequence enough to retain the overall shape, but perhaps to change the amino acid sequence. So there may be, and it's idle speculation. I mean, it's informed speculation, I should say, on my part. It certainly is not a claim that perhaps Pfizer might have an edge up on this particular problem.
Certainly, all of these are very concerning. Let's go and take a break there, though. Coming up, more on pathogenic priming with Dr. James Lyons-Weiler. Stay with us. And welcome back. You've likely seen him on other shows or podcasts, but this is our first time talking with Dr. James Lyons-Weiler, or Dr. Jack, as he sometimes goes by. He is the editor-in-chief of the peer-reviewed journal Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law. He's also the founder and CEO of the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge, or IPAK, I-P-A-K. I'm going to link those up on iSpyRadio.com. And so, going back to pathogenic priming, did the designers of the vaccine not know about this potential immune loophole? I mean, based on previous research going back into the 1950s, as I understand it, that this sort of effect has been known. How could they not know about this vulnerability to encountering the wild virus out there?
Well, they certainly did know about it. In fact, with collaboration with Dr. Fauci, it was announced early on initially that they were going to skip the animal studies for this and go right into human trials, which they did. They skipped the early animal trials and instead started human clinical trials before any animal had been studied. They then subsequently did animal studies, but they used rhesus macaque monkeys, which we know, the immunologists know, that rhesus macaque monkeys have a very muted respiratory virus response. And there's something strange about the respiratory virus system, the immune system of the rhesus macaque monkeys. So they're using monkeys instead of ferrets. And when they did that, Mark, they only looked at lung immunopathology. There was no report about the pancreas or the spleen or the liver or the brain. And Pfizer actually left out, they were small studies, small animal studies, and Pfizer actually left out what they called an outlier with no further explanation. So I have some concerns over the actual animal studies that they did do for these vaccines. And it was all over the news. I mean, it was called, what people knew to talk about at the time was antibody-dependent enhancement, or ADE, which is one possible outcome of pathogenic priming. Pathogenic priming per se is the act of exposing a person or an animal to a protein that could later on secondary exposure, when they see that protein again or a protein similar to it, could cause disease. And so, we're very concerned. And in fact, my initial, it's sad because my initial analysis, which although it was cited by some couple of dozen of studies, and it was verified and validated, my initial study in April actually predicted myocarditis in the form of autoimmunity against a heart cell protein called Titan. It includes other proteins that are in the spike protein that maybe explain some of the thrombosis and the thrombocytopenia. I'm not going to get into the complex biological pathways by which those could be connected, but the human body is amazingly complex, and when you introduce proteins that can cause autoantibodies, you never know what you're going to get. In fact, when you look at the scientific literature in PubMed on the number of studies looking at diseases of unknown origin, it was flat from 1950 until 1976. And then since 1976, the number of studies corrected for total publication output in PubMed on studies of diseases of unknown origin has increased linearly since 1976. And that was the very first influenza national vaccine program.
So I'm just baffled that if they knew that this potential design flaw, essentially, in the vaccines was out there, why did they rush forward with this if people, by taking the vaccine, could be putting themselves in more danger, not less? Was this just bungling in their haste to get something out the door? I mean, why would they do that?
Well, given that the CEO of Moderna published the scientific results as press articles, not in the peer-reviewed literature, and the animal study, I think, from Pfizer wasn't even peer-reviewed, every time that they would have a result, they would make an announcement and their stock would go through the roof. And, you know, the CEO of Moderna in particular, he has a track record since the onset of the outbreak here, of doing what's called pumping and dumping, pumping up the value of the stock and then selling off, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of stock, personal stock that he owns personally. So I'm concerned that there's a profit motive driving most, if not all, of this. HHS officials, including people that work in NIAID, where Anthony Fauci works, they are allowed under current regulations to have financial conflicts of interest and make money off of things like vaccines and molecular tests. So, you know, we really need to change this. And I have proposed something called Plan B, which is a completely new way to reform public health in a manner that disconnects all the profit motive, but that we'll save that for another time.
Well, the problem is there's no downside to any of this. You rush this out to market. You know that there's these design flaws. You know that you could be exposing people to more danger, but you don't have any liability. All you do, the only downside is you make even more money, or maybe slightly less once people start figuring it out. But I mean, even as you say, Fauci, he has no liability, but he's out there pushing it, and he's likely to get some compensation for all of this. I mean, this is a horrible situation, and bastardization of the basics of science and of medicine.
I agree completely. We call those perverse incentives, and it needs to stop.
How do we do that? Through legislation? And what would that look like?
Yeah, I'd like to see some legislation to disband CDC completely and restructure public health so that we have autonomous, independently operating scientific research institutes like IPAC scattered throughout the country under certain regulations. They can't have any financial conflicts of interest. They can't have ties to pharma. They can never take money from pharma. And their job is simply to do science and report the results and not have any financial interest whatsoever. If we can't do that basic step towards objectivity and science, I'm afraid all is lost. We really have to take on Plan B. And if you're interested in learning more, you can check out #PlanB on social media.
Okay. All right, let's go and take a break. Coming up, knowledge is power. And welcome back in our final segment now, Dr. James Lyon Weiler. He is the founder and CEO of the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge, or IPAC. It's a nonprofit organization that performs scientific research in the public interest. He's also the editor-in-chief of the peer-reviewed journal Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law. But you've also got something else that's out there. And in today's world, knowledge is power and definitely a force multiplier. You've recently introduced an incredible and growing catalog of courses offered through IPAC EDU, and that's just simply IPAC-EDU.org. And again, we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And that's designed to help people gain more of the kind of knowledge and wisdom needed right now to spot data manipulation and other malfeasance. So, I certainly consider iSpy Radio itself to be a knowledge show. So we love coming across these kinds of educational opportunities. What can you tell us about IPAC EDU?
IPAC EDU is a place where people can go to get college level education in science, especially biology, in law, history of law in the West, constitutional law, vaccine law, environmental law, and other courses and analytics, so you can learn how to analyze some data, spreadsheet use, and so on. How to use, basically, IPAC EDU exists to teach people what they should have learned from their public education in a manner that they can then know what their children should be learning and what tools their children and they need to be able to hold rational, logical discourse in the public square. If we can't know how to base our statements and our positions on facts, then we're simply dismissed. And this has happened to parent after parent, tens of thousands, 20,000 parents being dismissed by other people, hundreds of thousands being dismissed by other people. You can't believe what you've seen with your own eyes. Your own child was hurt. Your loved one, your family member died. One of our most popular courses, Mark, is how to read and interpret a scientific study. So, right, how do you get into a scientific study where you understand where things are supposed to be so that you can understand what the authors are communicating? This semester, we're teaching a course on essential readings in key readings in COVID-19 science. I'm teaching the course, of course, how to read and interpret a scientific study. I'm teaching a course on environmental toxicology or ecotoxicology and the effects of toxins in the environment on human health and ecosystem health. And it just goes from there. We keep adding more and more instructors every month. It's just exploding. The cost of these courses is less than $200 for a full semester in biology. There's two whole semesters in biology, just like a college experience. The courses are live. You get to meet other students. You join a cohort of students going through a class or going through a particular curriculum track towards a certificate. And, you know, this is what I can do. What I can do right now is I can raise the bar on the level of discussion and prepare and inform parents and grandparents and people who want to get out there and speak for themselves about what's happening. Our goal is to prevent the technocratic oligarchy from ever being able to pull the wool over the eyes of the public again. It has to stop somewhere, and all of our students are part of the solution.
Well, I absolutely love that. And I love this notion that you're out there. I love this notion that other people are out there, because there's no doubt that the education system has failed most people. As you said, you know, you're talking about being able to understand a scientific study. I mean, that should be, you know, taught in the very first semester of your college experience. And yet all they're thrown information, but they don't learn how to digest that information. And it's really shocking that the system isn't teaching that. Plus, I love the notion that there's more competition out there, because then you're truly competing on ideas and actual knowledge, not just doing what the education system does best, which is soak up money. I do want to return.
Absolutely, Mark.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So most of our students are not seeking a college education per se. They simply want the knowledge. And so we're offering certificates, and we're not particularly concerned about accreditation. So there are about 1 in every 100 student asks us if their credits will transfer for college. Our audience simply wants to learn as much and as fast as they can. And we found a way to do that.
Love it. Love it. Absolutely love it. Real quick, in the time that we have left here, because I kind of skipped over an important question from that last segment, in terms of this pathogenic priming and people may have put themselves in more danger by taking these vaccines, not less, like what the government is trying to say, will people know that they're falling to this pathogenic priming? Will there be signs and symptoms that they should be on the lookout for?
Well, I'm giving a presentation on the 27th to about 20,000 physicians, and I'm going to teach them that there are already are assays out there that a physician can use to determine if a person looks like they're moving towards autoimmunity against specific epitopes. So what we want to do is we want to be able to look for cross-reactive antibodies that react both to the human tissue as well as to the viral proteins. This is a well-established level of evidence that's necessary at the clinical level to be able to say this person has autoimmunity, for instance, against their myelin sheath in MS. It's the same thing, but you might have, say, autoimmunity against a heart muscle tissue. It's essential that physicians be informed about pathogenic priming. So anyone on social media can look up hashtag pathogenic priming, and they will find a wealth of information out there. Like I said, there's about 24 studies that have cited my original paper, and there's others that have validated it. So it's getting out there. But in terms of individual symptoms, it's difficult, you know, without a molecular test, to determine it.
Well, hashtag pathogenic priming, and we'll link, we'll find some resources and put that up on iSpyRadio.com on today's show page as well. Dr. James Lyon Weiler, I want to thank you so much. This is great.
Thank you.
You've heard it said that this is an information economy, and that's true. You not only can make a lot of money with good information, you can exploit those who don't have good information. Don't let yourself be exploited. There are some great knowledge and information links on today's show page at iSpyRadio.com, including links to Dr. Jack's sites, IPAC.edu, and his personal site and podcast. Too many to list here, so check those out and be sure to share those, because, as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.